you'll teach anything in school about it, even World War II.
So just in terms of, so that three or five, whichever it is, depending on, say, 5-year period, doesn't start until you apply.
That was a huge, very onerous change that was made.
Wow, I guess so.
It was obviously designed to severely constrict people's ability to really slow down their ability to transfer assets and qualify for Medicaid.
And so given that, what's the earliest time we could apply for Medicaid?
Well, there, and I would have to, you know, study all this and all, you know, there are a couple of options we ought to consider if your main goal is, you know, protecting the money. One thing we ought to consider is how much income Paul and Rose is coming in from Social Security and pension and that sort of thing. And then we also ought to figure out exactly what is it, does it cost Rose to be in Hilltop, number one, and that not just rent, but also depends or insure or pharmacy or anything else, all of her expenses. Secondly, we ought to figure out what does it cost Paul to live, you know, just day in, day out to pay the light bill and food and that sort of thing. And so that's our total outflow, and we know our inflow, and that comes up with a probably a monthly net outflow. Then we ought to look what would that be for, and you might ought to project a little bit of inflation, but we ought to figure out how much would we, quote, lose if we just paid out of pocket until the 5-year mark, you know, happens from when the transfer was made back in February of 06. So that's one thing we ought to study. And then, we just kind of keep that as one option. Another option is far more complicated. And with these amounts of money, it might or might work, not work. Again, a lot will depend on, I still would need to know how much is Paul and Rose's income and how much is their outflow for both Paul and Rose. And then you figure, what if you all gave all this property back to Paul and Rose, got it in their name, and then it's going to sound like total ridiculous to you, but there is a strategy where, you know, you use the law to your advantage and you get some technical gifts but what you do is then Paul and Rose would turn around and give it back to you. But it would be after Rose was in the nursing home, okay? And so then you all would use this money to pay the nursing home, basically. Would you pay the monthly nursing home? And so what might happen is before the 5-year period is up, Rose would qualify for Medicaid. And I know
because of the asset level.
Well, what's happening is I tell people to think about a candle burning from both ends, okay? So every day that goes by after Paul gives the money back to you all is a day that he is, quote, served on his penalty period. He sort of served a day of his penalty period. At the same time, there is another rule that we use here that says if you give the money back, it eliminates the penalty period for that amount of money. So every time you all give some money back to Paul to pay Rose's nursing home bill or pay his living expenses or whatever, then that means that the net transfer he made to you was much less than, you know, is $3,000 or $4,000 less. So every month you're shortening the penalty period by giving money back. Yet every day that goes by, the penalty period is getting shorter. So what's happening is the penalty period is being burned like a candle from both ends. And it surprises the heck out of you. It's sort of illogical, but it normally comes out when I figure this out for people that they end up with about half of the assets still in the kid's name. It might be 40%, it might be 60%, it might be 50%, it might be, but it's usually right around there that those assets are safe, Rose is on Medicaid, and we've protected some of the assets. Now obviously you, quote, lost a lot of them. And then you kind of have to be thinking in the back of your mind, how's Rose doing physically, health-wise? how long is Rose likely to live, you know? Now, there is another rule that would only come into play if you all were to give all the assets back to Paul and sort of start over. And again, this strategy really wasn't there until February 6th of 06, and this is when we had to come up with this. But another rule that comes into play is that Paul is allowed to have, we call it a spousal protection allowance or spousal anti-impoverishment allowance of $104,000 or $400 or half of the couple's assets or $104,400, whichever is less. So if this amount of money, Paul would get the flat $104,400 and we would be trying to deal with the rest of it. So again, we could figure all that out, but that's what would have to happen if you guys go back to the statements and find out, yes, in fact, everything was dated February 7th. And you know, that date is, it is February 6th, and I haven't had anybody who had, you know, stuff that happened February 5th, 6th, or 7th. And gosh, you almost wish that it was one day over the line. Can't you give us some grace? But I doubt it. But
can I ask a question? If this 5-year rule, what is the consequence? I'm not sure how you get penalized, except that it's a longer waiting period.
Well, or, you're paying.
I don't quite understand that. That 5-year. Time. What did we lose? That time.
Time is money, and so if you're paying $4,000 a month for the nursing home, you know, for all those months, that's what you're losing.
Yeah, but what I don't
understand.
You can't
qualify for Medicaid.
You can't qualify for 5 years.
Right.
So you have to pay your own for 5 years.
Exactly.
Okay. See, so that's what I didn't. Yep. Didn't realize.
Yeah.
I thought it was a 3-year.
Wait period for the
wait
asset.
Wait period for the asset or something, or you got penalized. And
yeah,
I didn't
you just can't
know
get
what,
Medicaid.
You can't get Medicaid.
Right.
Okay.
Linda's right. You just can't get Medicaid for those. But yet, if you, that you might hear it called the Mason Manor approach or whatever, but that's the idea where you all would give the money back to Paul and then they turn around and give it to you because Rose is already in the nursing home, and that sort of starts the penalty period. Well, then you're giving money back to pay their monthly bills. Mm-hmm. And that might end up, it probably would be a lot less than 5 years. It'd probably be less than 5 years. But you never know until you calculate it all out.
Yeah, and the would that include this life estate deed too? We'd reverse that
on the Petersburg.
The Petersburg property,
yes.
And the cash.
Yes. Well,
everything.
Okay. Probably the I believe so. I mean, I'd kind of have to just work it all out, but I would suspect so.
So there's actually been a gain on the gift since we got it. Paul and I are paying the taxes on that money now, but there has been a gain on it.
You mean things are worth more than they used to be?
Mm-hmm. So if we gave it back, how does...
You know, all we have to do is give back the amount that they gave you. That's all we have to give back.
But there's got to be tax...
Well, if you have...
Well, if we give it back, we're not keeping it.
Well, part of it, he's saying give part of it back.
Let's say that if they gave you $363,000 and it's now worth $383,000 and you paid some tax and all that, well, all we have to give back is $363,000, not what it's turned into. And so I suppose that any monies that you keep could reimburse you for your taxes, maybe, if we're...
But it's not been sold, so there's no tax consequence.
No, if we give it back.
I know, but you don't...
You're saying
you're
appreciated,
give it all
right?
Of it back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you
gave
it
have
all
to give
back.
The appreciation back.
Yeah, that's what...
Okay.
All we have to do to remove the gift is give back the amount that...
But there, what I'm saying is there's no... That doesn't trigger like a sale, which triggers like a capital gain or anything like that.
Just
when we
like
give
it
back.
Was.
As long as you're giving it back in kind,
okay.
The same way he gave it to you,
okay.
It's in kind. It's
right.
You don't have to pay a commission or...
Yeah, okay.
And
that was $325,000.
That 5 years starts when we apply for Medicaid.
Yes.
So
it's a very draconian, onerous change.
So you could apply for Medicaid tomorrow.
That we would.
Yeah.
We would apply and we would be turned down. But you have to apply to get the penalty
period
started.
So the sooner you apply, the better.
Exactly, if you're going to do that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Man, this makes my head spin. It's completely upside down from what
it is. It's a very draconian change. It was massive. And at the time, we didn't have this strategy figured out, and everybody's thinking, you know, there's nothing you're going to be able to do for your clients. But there are things like that that you can do. So, but, you know, again, since y'all did make those gifts, and it has been over 2 years, you know, close to 2.5 years.
Mm-hmm. It'll be 3 in February.
Right. Then that is an angle that we ought to look at, you know, and it might be better just to ride with what you got, you know, and do private pay and use the income from all those assets to help pay the bills. And, mm-hmm. you know, you just have to look at all that.
But okay, the cash was given as a gift, or the assets that they were wasn't cash.
The investment assets.
The investment assets were given in February of 2006.
Right.
This life stated deed wasn't done until March of 2007. So doesn't that reset the clock?
No, they aggregate it from the it's all aggregated. So, but. I mean, I see what you're saying. Okay, here's how I would handle that, is Paul is going to be, we might have him give back those assets, but Paul, remember, is going to be able to keep up to $104,000 or half, whichever is less. And so we might be able to fit in a later gift. We may have him give those back to him as well, or we might have you... use some of the money to sort of pay it back. I mean, you don't have to give back the land. We could value that gift, and we could use some of the money to pay back. So
that land, the Petersburg land's not worth that much, and it's not Daddy's anyway.
Clint offered 300 an acre when he was still farming. Mm-hmm. That's been 10 years ago. If anything, it's gone down. The water is... secret. See, the water has gone down.
So again, we're only talking $20,000 for that land, roughly. If
well,
that's a good number.
160. If it's 300, that's 48,000.
How did I get that?
Well,
you got 20,000 before, but you changed it on the new deal.
The
300 times six.
You printed your thing. You had a miscalculation there. 168.
Yeah, that's wrong.
300. That's I changed it on the email.
Yeah. What's the right number?
It's 48,000.
Okay. So that's wrong.
One third of that actually is our part. Right.
Okay.
One third is that. It's mom and daddy's. That mom's. That's the whole value.
We would have to look at that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we would have to just figure out what to do. But that is an issue depending on which strategy we use.
Yeah.
Short question here. What about the Hagee land? That's only the quarter. There's that section out there
that is undivided. There's 160 acres on the Hagee land. Maybe it may be 162. There was a little more in that section, but there's roughly 162 acres, and that takes in the Hagee land and Popo's quarter also.
So this 160 includes that? This 160 acres?
That's the whole, that's all
okay.
She has out there.
Yeah.
Which, all right.
She has a third of the 100 of the quarter of Popo's, which is separate and apart from the Hagee land. She has a third of a half a section. So that, but the total is 162 acres.
Okay.
Both of them combined.
Okay.
And I don't know whether the Hagee land, I think the water is going, that used to be good water, but I really think Clint was offering 300 an acre for the whole Hagee plus the quarter.
So is there another 25% of another 160 acres?
No.
It's all in
what he's saying is there's really two plots of land.
Yeah.
But it's all
and a total is 162 acres.
We got it
acres,
all covered.
So
yeah.
It's
right.
Covered.
Right. It's covered.
All right. Another thing need to talk about was in your list of questions is that, just to kind of review for you, is that until March of 2005, people could own their house and the land contiguous with the house and go apply for Medicaid and get Medicaid, and then if they died and their will says I leave my house to my kids, then the kids got the house. Well, in March of 05, Texas changed its law and said we are going to create the Medicaid Estate Recovery Program, MERP, MERP, and we are going to file a claim in that probate against the home of somebody who was on Medicaid and was unmarried and died while they were on Medicaid and still had a home. So remember, they can get Medicaid. And so nowadays, you can still get Medicaid even though you own a home that's worth a lot of money. But when you pass away, the state is going to file a claim against the home for the amount of Medicaid, the cumulative amount of Medicaid that the state paid for that decedent. Okay, so, and that's that MERP, M-E-R-P, MERP. Now, very important to understand here that as long as there is a surviving spouse, they are not going to file a MERP claim. It is inapplicable at this time under the current law. And I'm not hearing any rumors that they're going to change the law, but they could. So Paul has nothing to worry about.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so at that time, when they first did that in March of 05, we attorneys figured out a way to really to turn that house into a non-probate asset, that homestead. And the way we were doing it was we were creating a revocable living trust, just like we did for y'all, and the only asset we put in there was the home, the homestead, okay? The home and the contiguous acres surrounding it. Because now, at that point, the trust owned the home, the Medicaid recipient and his or her spouse did not, okay? So if they died, the trust owned the home, and the home passes under the trust, and there is no will, and there's no probate, and so the state never has a way to file its claim. Well, in February of 06, they changed this rule. We talked about it a minute ago. Mm-hmm. They didn't do anything with the homestead revocable trust rule. In December of 2006, they changed the rule, and it wasn't a congressional change. It wasn't a state legislative change. It was simply a Medicaid change in interpretation of the rules. And what they decided was that they were going to begin interpreting that if you had a revocable trust that owned a home, you didn't have a home. You had a trust. And the trust was a disqualifying asset. So we're not going to give you Medicaid.
Uh-huh.
However, you can take your home out of the trust and give it back to yourself, and now you will get Medicaid. But what they did is that means the home is now subject to the MERP claim in probate. Because
mm-hmm.
see, now the only
mm-hmm.
way for the home...
Mm-hmm.
Well, so we came up with this ladybird deed. And it is still working to this day. And I suppose there is some chance that they may change the law someday, but there are no rumors to that effect. And it's, you know, we have a copy of a letter from the chief counsel of the Medicaid office saying it works. I've used it many, many times, and it works. The way it works is it it combines the life estate with a general power of appointment. So this is getting to be a pretty busy, complicated deed because you got several things going on in it. But basically, Paul and Rose would give their homestead to Linda and Paul Jr. and they would retain the right to live there the rest of their life. So because they have the right to live there the rest of their life, it is still their homestead, okay, for property tax purposes and for federal income tax purposes. So we get all those same benefits we got with the other life estate. The property is still in their name, so they still have their homestead property tax freeze. They're over 65, or I'm sorry, the ag exemption, the homestead exemption, and the over 65 freeze. Excuse me, for federal tax purposes, it's still in their estate, so when they pass away, y'all would inherit it with a cost basis of fair market value at date of death. So whatever it appreciates to, you'll get it at that amount. However, remember what we already talked about is that we would, if they were to give you a life estate all by its, or a remainder interest and keep the life estate, they have made a gift. And that gift would disqualify us for Medicaid. I mean, it'd be a 5-year penalty period.
Right.
So we got to figure out a way around that. Well, by adding this clause called a general power of appointment, which you usually see in trusts, and totally different than their revocable trust, but just it's normally a trust clause. A general power of appointment means that the transaction is basically revocable because the grantor retains the right to give it to somebody else, to sort of wind it, reel it back in like a fishing lure and cast it to somebody else. So that basically, for state law and federal tax law purposes and Medicaid purposes, makes the deed of the house to you all an incomplete gift. So because it's not complete, because they can take it back, you know. Paul could decide that he doesn't like Linda and he likes Paul Jr. I mean, I'm not saying, you know, we don't want to do that, but that's what it means. Or and vice versa. Be careful now. It works the other way. Okay? So I think that's why they call it, look at this.
Look at this.
That's why they call this a ladybird deed. I think, and this dates back from our English common law heritage way back in the 1100s or sometime, where you had all the feudal lords and stuff, and they were holding on to property. Well, they would do these ladybird deeds, and the idea is a ladybird flitting from flower to flower.
I got it.
And if he doesn't like, well, she doesn't like one flower, she goes to the other flower. So,
I thought it had something to do with wildflowers and LBJ.
Yeah. Everybody thinks it had to do with Ladybird Johnson.
Did it change when Ladybird died?
Nothing to do with Ladybird Johnson. But anyway, because the grantor retains the right to bring the transaction back, it is an incomplete gift, so there is no gift. So now, even though he's given the remainder interest to y'all and he kept the life estate, because he can take the remainder interest back, there is no gift. However, at death, it all becomes final. The general power of appointment goes away. You can't take it back anymore. So now we have avoided probate, which we have to do to avoid, to beat the Medicaid state recovery programs, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we don't have a penalty period, and we haven't changed our property tax, which is a good thing, and we haven't cost ourselves bad income tax problems. You know, you're inheriting it at fair market value on the day of death. So I'm not aware of a disadvantage to doing a ladybird deed. Now, I always caution people, just like I did with this revocable trust, they could change that law.
Oh, yeah.
And they might do it someday.
If they get enough revenue bind, they will.
Yeah, and now in some states, they this ladybird deed works. In some of the 50 states, it doesn't. Some of the northeastern states are very aggressive
mm-hmm.
with Medicaid,
mm-hmm.
you know, state recovery. So they call it enhanced estate recovery. Anyway, so
right.
So at this point, I am not hearing any rumors that the law might change, etc. But that's my caveat,
right.
You know.
Sure.
Okay, so now the ladybird deed only works for the homestead. Because
and
the homestead,
the house and all the land that's connected
that's right.
to it, doesn't matter how many acres it is.
That's right.
Doesn't matter the value of it.
For this purpose, it's all the land connected to it.
Mm-hmm.
And so so with the ladybird deed, what is the property tax assessed value on your house and your land at this point, approximately?
I can't pull that out. All I can pull out is the total amount of tax on our 78 acres over at Collinsville. The tax we pay is $700 and something.
Well, they're going to value this, at, you know, Medicaid is going to value it at property tax purposes. you know, a property tax appraisal values.
I would have to look at the sheet that, what do you call it, that they,
the rendition or the
Well,
yeah.
you know, there's a group that
appraisal
says that
history.
Appraisal
history.
Right. Yeah, yeah, that comes out about once a year.
Right. And so, you know, obviously it might sell for more than the property tax value,
right.
but
right.
Medicaid's going to consider it.
Let me ask you the implications now. See, there's three blocks of land. The Heggie land in West Texas,
right.
which is a third of a half a section. That's roughly 120 acres. Then there's the Gregory Popo's land, and it's a mile apart, so roughly, isn't it?
Yeah. Well,
it's roughly
one section over.
Yeah.
Okay.
Rosa Lane's part on that was a third, which is what, a third of 106?
What you call a section?
Well, no, the quarter of a section, 120 acres. And then we have the 78 acres over here.
Okay, well, the 78 acres is your homestead, so we can
yeah.
use this ladybird deed for it, and that's how it's looked.
Well, that's, you know, the way land is appreciated in Grayson County. Boy, it wouldn't take many acres over there to pay the whole value of West Texas, because that's...
And see, West Texas, because it's not your homestead,
yeah.
then
it
then
couldn't qualify.
Anything we do with it is a gift, whereas
yeah.
if it
yeah.
we use labor deeds, there's not a gift, so...
Okay, then that's a good deal that the 78 acres is the homestead, because that's where the value is.
Right. That's right. We'd be telling you to move out to West Texas if it was out there.
Yeah.
For some people might tell me that now.
One small note on our inventory here. I don't think we have don't we have some mineral rights both in Montague County, both on the Gray side and the Gregory side, which are not very big.
I don't know that we even need that on there.
I'm just saying.
Yeah.
I don't think we need. There is a little bit of value there.
There is.
Mineral rights.
They've offered, there's a sheet that I have in the records that some company has offered.
Does that have anything
that
to do
thousand.
With?
Well, I mean, it's an asset.
Yeah, but I mean,
someday if we apply for Medicaid,
yeah.
we would have
may
to
not be all of it. Yeah.
fill out a list of the Medicaid application of all of our assets.
Including
so,
vehicles and equipment and all, everything.
Right.
Okay.
Now, you know, I don't know about your equipment, but a lot of people's farm equipment is kind of rusty and not worth very much.
Mine's the same way.
And that's common.
Yeah.
Vehicles, you're allowed one vehicle if, you know, and so if you have two right now, you'd have to kind of pick eventually. Now, remember your allowance, I'll call it, of that up to $104,000.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can fit a vehicle in there.
Mm-hmm.
And a vehicle's at Blue Book value, which most people's vehicles are not worth very much. So,
especially 15-year-old vehicles.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. I'm with you, man.
Want to buy a couple of
years? Oh, well, you know, I have to have some ways that would make this guy laugh.
Okay.
And I... Craig, he uses them too.
Well, so those mineral rights, if they're non-producing, we value them at $10, roughly $10 per mineral acre. If they're producing, you know, if you have a letter where some company offered to buy them from you,
mm-hmm.
that's a reasonable market value, because they're usually asking you, they're offering less than they're worth.
Right.
Which is, but you know, that is an indication of fair market value that we can use.
Yeah.
So if we
yeah.
needed to fit that in under your allowance that you're allowed to keep, you know, that $104,000, or if we wanted to transfer them, we have a way to value them there.
Yeah. And just one comment to close that out. I think one of them is producing, but it's like minuscule checks on the Gray side, like, and it's probably at producing value. Is that what it would be if it were producing?
You know, it used
Go ahead.
Used to be three times annual production, so if it made $200 a year, then it'd be... But oil has gone up so much that I think a better yardstick might be five times annual production. But if it's not producing much, that's usually not very much money.
Well, one of the sheriff on Pawpaw's land, HEPA, owns the mineral rights, and it's I have a check now for $182. It's
so
for her farm.
You're saying they're both producing that?
Well, that's a minor.
Now, the Hardison land that I aired, I got a check the other day for $20 or $30. It's very small amount. The production is not a whole lot, but they were opening a lot of these old wells up because of the price of oil.
Monte County, they're trying new technology on old wells.
Yeah,
there are areas of Monte County that are really hot. They call it the Barnett Shale.
Exactly, the shale is up there, and they found a way to do petroleum out of that. I saw a thing in the Star Telegram that I just happened across. So,
One thing I wanted to, you need to change that.
Yeah, please.